if I might just clarify for the record, I apologize for not doing this. I counted up the members, but I did not record your vote and announce it. And so, with your, so just so our record is complete, that you voted aye, and the vote is actually 11-7 instead of 10-7. Doesn't change the outcome, but I didn't.
That's
now
correct.
That. Not good to overlook the Chief Justice. So,
thank you. That's correct. Thank you, Bill. So we are on now, item 8, Judicial Branch Administration, presentation of audit reports for Judicial Council acceptance. It's an action item. And we welcome Justice McGinnis. Thank you for being here and taking over as advisory on the as chair of the A&E. And we also have Mr. Michael Ewan and John Judnick. Please proceed.
As they're coming up, before you start, Chief Justice, an issue is brought up. There have been press inquiries about an item on our agenda that says tentative. What does it say? It's tentative item, and so that. There's no secrets. The executive committee placed a time item there because we were told there may be an issue presented to us with regard to a naming question regarding the courthouse that did not materialize, and so there is no other item for the benefit of anyone listening or the press inquiries.
Thank you for clearing that up, Justice Huffman.
Later.
Mr. McGinnis?
Yeah. All right, Chief, thank you. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to appear before the Council this morning on behalf of the Advisory Committee on Financial Accountability and Efficiency for the Judicial Branch. As the members of the Council are aware, the A&E Committee, if you will, was created in June 2010. One of the committee's primary duties is to review draft audit reports for the Judicial Branch and to recommend whether the Council should accept them. The committee is also charged with making recommendations to the Council on individual and systemic issues identified during the course of its audit reviews. Once the Council approves an audit report, it is deemed final and placed on the Court's website to facilitate public access. The committee met recently on May 13th and May 25th to review 10 draft audit reports. By way of summary of the report review process, and this will not correspond precisely at this point with what is reflected on the slides, the committee focused on several factors, including the number of issues identified in a given report and the level of risk associated with these issues in terms of potential loss, increased cost, or diminishment of public confidence in the court's ability to manage public funds. The committee also weighed the number of recurring issues from past audit reports and the corrective measures taken by court management. Finally, the committee considered practical limitations on a court's ability to address a particular issue given resource constraints such as budget and personnel. Following its review, the committee recommended 8 audit reports for acceptance on today's consent agenda. Several of these reports, including the audit reports of the Lassen and Shasta Superior Courts, were particularly noteworthy, both for their small number of higher risk issues and their lack of recurring issues. The committee also recommended 2 reports, the audit reports of the Tehama and San Francisco Superior Courts, for acceptance on today's discussion agenda. I'll now ask John Judnick, Senior Audit Manager of the Administrative Office of the Court's Internal Audit Services, to brief the Council on the specifics of these 2 audits.
Thank you, Justice. Good morning, Chief. Good morning, Council members. The 2 audit reports that are being presented for the discussion agenda today are San Francisco and Tehama. I'd like to point out that audit reports review a period of time, and then that point in time at the end where we close is where we stop our audit process and we receive recommendations. In order to evaluate the report properly, you have to review the further actions that are being taken on those audit reports, and we do follow-ups on those. My presentation will cover those two audit reports. There'll be a short statement by Mr. Ewan of San Francisco talking about the further actions that the court has taken subsequent to our closeout of that audit report on San Francisco. I will also talk about systemic and individual issues that were identified during the committee meetings that will have further attention at subsequent meetings. Going forward, the committee recommended a report to the A&E committee at its next meeting to talk about the systemic issues that were identified and to talk about actions that we will be taking or have taken to identify corrective measures and to identify other actions to correct those measures and to identify corrective measures for other courts. Third, the two reports that I identified on San Francisco and Tehama both clearly stand out of the 10 that were reviewed by the A&E committee in July, but for different reasons. Tehama Superior Court has similar issues to most of the other court issues that were on the consent agenda. Similar issues concerning cash collections, access controls to DMV, travel expense reimbursement controls, and so on. Those issues wouldn't have identified it as a discussion agenda item. The issue that brought it to discussion agenda was a material noncompliance with financial reporting objectives. Tehama Superior Court had approximately $1.8 million of court funds held by the county. Those funds had not been reported in the court's quarterly financial statements or general ledger, and their fund balance not only at the close of the audit period under review, June 30th, 2009, but also June 30th, 2010, was roughly the same. So it was approximately equal to its fund balance as reported on its financial statements. The court proactively notified Internal Audit Services subsequent to the audit close, but prior to the finalization of the audit report through presentation to the Judicial Council. That finalization is where we finally put it onto the court website. The court has currently recorded balances in its general ledger and is negotiating transfer of those funds to the court's bank account. We produced a letter that is attached to the audit report because we did not change the numbers in the audit report to reflect the changes that were identified by the court subsequently to the audit close. The report, the cover letter, is basically there to ensure that the balances reflected in the report as audited are actually correctly represented in the audit report and are not misleading any reader of the audit report. With that, at least for Tehama Superior Court, I'll open it to questions because the recommendation of the committee was that the Judicial Council accept the audit report on Tehama Superior Court.
Justice Hull.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Yes, sir, I just wondered on the slide that we have before us, just in passing, we have it that the court is negotiating transfer of funds to the court's bank account. What is there to negotiate here?
We are working with our Office of General Counsel. The county has the money, and there are certain questions about those monies that the county wants to present to the Board of Supervisors before the transfer.
Is there any dispute, though, between the county and the court as to where these funds belong?
On the initial $1 million, because they're $2 million parcels, I'll call them, the first million, I don't think there's any question. It's just a matter of timing with the MOU to agree to that. On the second $1 million amount, there are certain issues that need to be clarified, and the Office of General Counsel is working with the court to get that straightened out.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Justice Huffman.
Yes. As I understand that the source of that money, there's money that goes back some years the county provided to the court. Is that right? It's not money that the court collected and then stashed somewhere else. This is money that came from the county, as I'm told, out of the criminal justice construction the money that the county has. Is that right?
That is correct. The monies were received under an MOU agreement, in 1997. And those monies were roughly $2.5 million amounts that covered court operations for that year under negotiation with the county. And the half of the money is general fund, and the other half came from the Criminal Justice Courthouse Construction Fund.
And those funds have always been held by the county, essentially, I gather, for the benefit of the court?
That is correct, with only one minor $2,000 expenditure from it about 6 years ago.
So the court hasn't actually used any of that money?
Court has not used any of the money. The money has grown through interest. The county pooled rate over the course of the last 12 years from $1 million to almost $2 million at the current moment.
So the issue is not how the court acquired the money, but rather the reporting process, and in your view that they should have, at the outset, been reporting that as a fund balance, even though the county is holding the money and it's the money the county provided for at an earlier time.
Yes. Under the agreement, the only party that can authorize expenditure is the presiding judge of that court.
All right. Thank you.
Kim?
So, did we make a... Do you want a separate motion?
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm waiting for the chief to, but she's...
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
This is Kim Turner. I just wanted to comment that as a member of the A&E committee, I think the thing that was of concern to the committee is that, you know, we're now 14 years into trial court funding. We're certainly many, many years, I don't know how many, into our trial court financial policies and procedures manual. And so the concern that there may still be some small sums of money, you know, that really inure to the benefit of the trial courts but are not identified and are not known by the branch, particularly in these difficult times when trial court budget working group, for example, often looks at the health of a court by looking at how much their budgets are, how much they have in reserves. I mean, this really is a reserve that should have the budget working group, for example, should have known about. Not that it would have necessarily made a difference to an allocation in prior years, but you know, we have looked at these things as part of our sort of snapshot to see how the courts are doing, that the overall health of the courts, and to ensure that we have a really clear picture of the status of each and every court as we get into these very difficult times of looking at budget, declining budgets, and how we're going to allocate the spoils of the funds that are provided to us. So I think that was the main concern, is that, you know, we don't know if this is the only court in which their money is held outside of the trial court out of the treasury, but if so, we would certainly like to make an effort to identify them, do the due diligence to find out where they are, and get them appropriately transferred into funds that are recognized.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Justice Miller, did you want to be heard?
I was going to make a motion to approve, but if there's further discussion, I'll wait.
I just had a quick question, and I don't know if Stephen or somebody from finance is here, or Kim, you may know. Was Tehama viewed by any chance as an underfunded court by virtue of their, or an overfunded court? Would having known about this amount have made any difference, or were there any adjustments made to their budget based on the size of their, no?
I think it's hard. I don't know the answer to the underfunded.
I know the answer. The answer is no. They never went in for a deficiency funding.
Okay.
They used the money. Also, quite honestly, the money in a lot of the small courts, the money was held in various different ways by counties. Some of the money was going to be used to fund new courthouse construction. Some was going to help furniture. And I think there's a very serious question of whether or not the court had to report that or not. And John and I can argue about that at a later date. The bottom line, it comes before trial court funding. There's no money missing. The court never used that money. They never went to the trial courts and said, I need deficiency funding. They funded it, their own courts, under their own budget, and the money was just sitting there. And quite honestly, as John has indicated us, there is some concern or some contention about the other half million. Who has that money? And the question is, if they have reported that in their budget, they may have been reporting it incorrectly because it really was the county money. So I would ask that we proceed.
Okay.
So if it's okay, I'll go ahead and make a motion that we accept the audit report for Tehama.
I'll second it.
Justice Hull and Judge Pine seconds. Any more discussion? All in favor of accepting the audit of Tehama Superior Court?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
The second court audit report that is being presented for discussion purposes today is San Francisco Superior Court. I won't go into the extreme details and the nuances of the issues in that audit report. All the details are there. It's 160 pages long. There are numerous issues, numerous reportable issues in high-risk and exposure areas of operations. There are numerous repeat issues with significant financial impact that deal with significant programs where the court has not sought or received reimbursement. Some of the areas that I'm talking about here are cash collections, where there are issues concerning the lack of supervisor review and approval of cash counts of the cashiers on daily balancing, the appropriate void transaction approval by supervisory personnel of the court, the control and reporting of mail payments that are being received, and the security over that unprocessed mail payments coming in. There's an issue in terms of collection on court-ordered debt, where the court has underachieved over the last number of years, significantly under the benchmark collection performance ratios that have been established for courts of that size. Additionally, there are areas of payroll processing that are weak in terms of the internal controls associated with the court, in terms of control and reporting on payroll. The court is on the county's payroll system. That payroll system has deficiencies where the court is working through it. Those deficiencies have caused the court to have a lack of timely analysis and reporting for reimbursement of funds, so it has affected the court's cash flow. Because of that payroll processing and reporting, there are also issues concerning the payment of local judicial benefits. For the two-year period that we reviewed, the recording problem resulted in approximately $241,000 of local judicial benefits absorbed by the court and not billed to the county, which is responsible for those. There are areas in procurement where there's lack of sole source documentation. There's issues concerning controls over the finance office of billings and documentation of those billings. Contracts were noted to lack competitive bids in many cases. There is missing and incomplete and incorrect documentation associated with those contracts. There are also concerns in a high-risk area concerning DMV access, and that's the access where court personnel access the DMV to determine priors and record transactions from traffic infractions and misdemeanors. There are also issues in accounts payable on travel claim reimbursement and the documentation associated with that. Many of these are repeat issues from the prior audit. The last area is probably the most significant in terms of the audit report, and that concerns cost reimbursement issues between the court and the county. Many of these programs have existed for a very long time when the court was part of the county and have just continued forward. The issue is not with the programs themselves, but how the court seeks reimbursement and gets those programs paid for by the county, which primarily is responsible for that funding. In the civil grand jury area for the two-year period we reviewed, there's roughly $200,000+ where the court did not have reimbursement of civil grand jury amounts. That is non-Rule 10 allowable, so that has to be reimbursed by the county. The Indigent Defense Fund is also a program that the court administers, and that's roughly $180,000 a year, or for the 5 years we reviewed, $800,000, where it does not appear that the court received reimbursement for that program. There's also a uniqueness to San Francisco Superior Court where it has a 24/7 bail and bond payment collection unit at the Hall of Justice. Those personnel at that location on a 24/7 basis perform some other work, but basically that is usually a county responsibility of the Sheriff Department. Those dollar amounts associated with that are roughly $730,000 a year. There are also concerns about, for that particular program, about the operations in terms of segregation of duties and the appropriateness of some of the funds that are collected. As I said earlier, the audit covers a period of time and then ends and closes at a point in time, and we seek responses and recommendations as to what the court is doing. Today we have Michael Ewan, the Court Executive Officer of San Francisco, who was appointed as Court Executive Officer in September of last year. Mr. Ewan will provide a short statement, and the focus really is on what the court is doing now. And from an audit standpoint, audit believes that the court has taken proactive measures. They are addressing the issues that have been brought up through the audit report and have the support of the bench. There are certain issues concerning what it can do going forward and also looking backward in terms of collecting monies. Michael.
Good morning, Chief, and members of the council. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to share some remarks with you about our audit report. I would also like to thank Justice McGinnis and the A&E committee for the work that they have done in reviewing our audit report, and obviously John Judnick and the AOC's internal audit services team for their extensive work in our court. Being an auditor is a very tiring job, and no one knows exactly what the auditor will find, but the benefit of what the auditor will find is invaluable in identifying issues and bringing positive organizational change. And John and his team certainly identified plenty of issues for my court to work on and change. As John mentioned, I've been the CEO in San Francisco for only 10 months. And prior to being CEO, I was the CFO from June of 2008 up until I was appointed CEO last September. But I'm sure all of you will agree that the court is an institution that transcends the staff and the judges who work for it. No matter who the PJ or the CEO are, the court will exist and outlive any leadership who may come and go. And it is precisely for this reason that although the base time period that was audited of 2005 through 2008 precedes my time at the court, I take pride in the changes that we have already made, and I look forward to using this comprehensive audit to continue making our court more efficient, more responsible, and a model of best practices in all regards. While the audit identified 26 conditions, as John mentioned, including 8 that were mentioned in a previous audit from 2005, I can assure you that during my 10 months as CEO, we have already corrected or are close to fully correcting 92% of the issues that were presented to me. Also, it is significant to note that I proactively raised with the audit team the 2 significant changes that I was seeking to accomplish when I first identified them when I got to the court, and those are related to the civil grand jury and the indigent defense fund. I raised these items to the internal audit services team because I needed a critical eye and assistance from an audit report to basically go to the county and either transition these functions back to the county and away from the court or seek proper reimbursement from the county if the court were to continue to manage these programs on an annual basis. And frankly, with support from the draft audit report, that is before you, we have been very successful on this front. Specifically, in the past 10 months, the court has received $73,241,000 from the county for reimbursement of civil grand jury costs for the current fiscal year that ends in 6 days. We have also received $193,805 from the county to cover the court's costs of managing indigent defense for the current fiscal year. In the past 2 fiscal years, when I served as CFO and then subsequently CEO, the court has made progress in other major findings as well, and I'll go through these at this point. We have eliminated the night shift at the Hall of Justice, and that night shift was basically responsible for, among other duties, as John mentioned, collecting bail. Now, I do have a slight disagreement with the number identified in the report. This change has actually saved the court only $67,856, and this is basically in a night shift premium pay. And the reason why that is different, let me clarify for the council, that the night shift employees were basically responsible for many more duties than simply collecting bail. These other duties are court operations duties as defined in Rule 10.810 of the California Rules of Court, and they included preparing calendars for the following day, reconciling bench warrant data with our case management system, pulling records to fulfill public records requests, and general filing. In February of 2010, however, the court transitioned overnight and weekend and holiday bail collection to the sheriff. And I continue to have discussions with the sheriff on when I can transition all bail collection to him. So not just the off-hours bail, but bail during regular court hours as well. I hope to have this completed within the next 6 months. We've also corrected cash collections items, where supervisors now approve all closeout balances and all voids. We've enhanced collection of court-ordered debt, In March of 2010, the court hired two collection agencies to collect this debt, and we've been actively working with AOC experts to implement all of the other audit recommendations to improve court-ordered debt collection. We've addressed payroll issues identified in the audit to the extent possible, given the court's reliance on an antiquated county payroll system. Although we are in the backyard of Silicon Valley, the county's payroll system has not caught up to that and is several decades old. We have addressed payroll issues identified in the audit to the, that's what I just went through. We have tightened up procurement and contracting processes to ensure that documentation is complete and that competitive bidding is practiced and that payment requirements are met. We have corrected our judicial benefits issue to the point where the county pays entirely now for all local judicial benefits. We've resolved the DMV-related issues to the extent possible given the obstacles of reprogramming a 30-year traffic case management system that we have, and we are trying to improve our interface with the DMV. And finally, we have also corrected accounts payable issues by requiring that all general and travel expense claim payments have complete documentation and all necessary approvals. In summary, I want to assure the council again that progress is being made in all of the areas that have been identified in our report, and we do so to the extent that our budget allows us to make these improvements. As I said, Internal Audit Services has done an excellent job bringing forth all of these issues, and I'm committed to continuing on my watch to professionalize and bring forth positive change to our court. I hope to be given the opportunity to come back again in the future to provide an update of our continued progress. And while I'm pleased to report that we've already corrected 92% of the issues, I recognize that we can do better, and we will. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Justice Huffman.
Yeah, I just want to observe that I think this is an example of our process working as we had hoped that it would. When the original A&E committee was created, one of its tasks is to review audits, and of course there were 10 audits reviewed, 8 of which came to you on the consent calendar because they're fairly routine. But I think what you see happening here, it really creates a dialogue between the audit team, the A&E committee, and the trial court, where a new CEO can come in, find these things, make the corrections, and to the great benefit of the court system. So I'm encouraged by that, and I think having, where there are problems, giving an invitation to the trial court for their executive or PJ or both to come in and address issues with the council is the way I would hope that this would happen in the future.
Thank you, Justice Huffman. Judge Pine?
I'm a member of this, have been a member of this committee, and I wanted to just first of all say how much I appreciated the work in these audits. They're very comprehensive, very professional, very helpful to the reader. And some of these audit reports were prepared by AOC staff and some were by an outside consultant, but the work was just superb, and I just want to commend you for that. I can understand why these take a lot of time because of the thoroughness of the analysis. Let me just ask you, Mr. Yuna, you'd gotten reimbursement from the county. I had the impression it was just for recent periods. Did you get reimbursement for past years?
So that's correct, Judge Pines. We received reimbursement for the current fiscal year that's going to end in 6 days, and we continue to have discussions with the county for what do we do to try to rectify the issue of the prior 14 years since trial court funding. So that's a discussion we continue to have.
It could help you with your budget if you could get reimbursement now.
It will definitely help us with our budget. Given the magnitude of our problem, though, it would probably only result in an extra $1 million, so it would be about 10% of our budget problem.
I guess I don't know how we're going to proceed. Mr. Judnick, do you have a response? What's your evaluation of what's happened?
We have worked with Mr. Ewing and his court in the last 10 months. Based upon this audit report, his presentation, the activities, this is an item, as we presented to A&E, where we will do a follow-up review. It's right next door, so it makes it easy. But we will check on these measures and work with the court to ensure that we agree that all these issues have been corrected and assist them however we can to ensure that they do get corrected and on an ongoing basis are kept steady.
Justice Hull, then Judge Kaufman.
Thank you, Chief. Mr. Ewan, thank you for your information. It did occur to me, though, the remaining 8% of the audit deficiencies, if I can call them that you refer to, some of what Mr. Judnick put up struck me as a layperson in this area as being more serious than others. My first question is, of that 8%, are there any that you, with your expertise, still consider to be fairly serious deficiencies that need to be addressed?
Thank you, Justice Hull. We take the position that everything identified in the report are certainly items that need to be corrected. So, frankly put, everything is serious. If it's serious enough to be brought to my attention and put in an audit report from the Internal Audit Services team, then that's definitely an indicator that something needs to happen. I can say that of the remaining 8%, these are also changes that will be more difficult to make. For instance, they are security-related changes. That's one of them, security of our court facilities. And while it's very easy for, let's say, the courthouse across the street where my office is in, because it's a 100% court-occupied building, it's very easy to make security changes. Not so much at the Hall of Justice, where the court is only about a 23% occupant and the county occupies the rest of that building. Trying to, for instance, improve the porous perimeter of that building has been a very impossible task, and it's frankly something that has dated back to over 10 years ago when the court first started having these discussions with the county. It's not easy to try to change a building that is 60 years old and has deficiencies. Another example is another facilities-related item, which is the court expended funds for facility improvements, and such facility improvements are a HVAC system for our servers, which are at the Hall of Justice, but also that room is unsprinklered. Well, frankly put, the entire building is unsprinklered, so it's not just that room, and it would be very very difficult, if not impossible, to try to bring in a dedicated sprinkler line that's not connected to domestic water supply to sprinkler that building. But also, when the court expended the funds on trying to make sure our IT server equipment was properly protected, it was in a time where the county pointed their finger to the court to do it. It was before the AOC had responsibility for court facilities, and the court, frankly, was stuck to make a decision. Do we continue to have a he said, she said type of dispute with the county over who should pay this? And meanwhile, allow that risk for our computer server equipment to melt down? Or should we simply pay the $9,000 a year to get some type of protection in there and keep maintaining that system? Those are some of the things of what we're working on, things that require more than just the court and other outside entities. And, of course, we'll continue to have discussions with those outside entities. But because it's not all completely in the control of the court, it's a little bit more difficult to try to bring forth that change.
I appreciate that, I thank you for the answer. But it does sound to me like because it's not only your court who is involved, that it may take some time to address these remaining 8% of these, or at least all of them, of the deficiencies. Is that right?
That is right, but I can tell you that my presiding judge isn't here, but I'm sure she's listening. I gave her a commitment that I would be on the job for a long time, so hopefully it will be within my career.